We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
This hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com.
Home run. Hits that one deep to left. Malley with the head down because he knows it is gone. Second home run of the day for Chris Bryant. He is 3-for-3. 6-5 Reds as KB pulls the Cubs closer at the Great American Ballpark.
Attaboy, KB.
Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays, 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
You make a couple of changes and you start to see the results. And that's what we're talking about now with one of the guys involved in reshaping an already very successful baseball swing. Mike Bryant is the head of Bryant Baseball Academy, the father of Chris Bryant, and he is our guest on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. How are you guys doing?
We're good. I'm fascinated by some of the subtleties and the changes to Chris's swing. Tom Verducci of Sports Illustrated wrote about it and had the receipts and had the results and tracked everything with all of the data that's available. What I'm curious about is the moment it was decided that this had to be done. How did you get there?
That's an interesting question. Well, it's an ongoing process and it changes, you know, sometimes month to month, week to week, even at bat to at bat. But, it's a compilation. You look at, who's having success against them. You try to figure out how the pitchers are getting them out. And, this thing like seemed to be kind of like a slow culmination of things, you know, where pitchers starting to pitch up in the zone and, you know, to combat the, quote, launch angle revolution, unquote, those two dreaded words, launch angle, which is basically just a number. So, I mean, the pitchers are pitching up in the zone. We had to adjust this bat path. It takes time to make these adjustments. It takes a lot of hard work, lots of reps, a couple hundred hacks in the cage at a time daily. And then eventually you just react accordingly. And so he flattened his bat at the top of the zone, made sure he was getting his hands above the baseball where the pitchers were, getting he was missing under the ball. So we had to make some adjustments. And, we saw that over the last year, prior to pandemic in 2020, it was the same thing. They started to work their way up in the zone. And Chris made some adjustments over the winter and they, worked hard with him in spring training and they finally clicked in. It took, took a little bit, but hopefully they, he's ingrained them into his swing now.
Well, and it sounds like that's definitely the case when you're talking about 200 hacks a day. That was one thing that was brought up specifically. Was that the ballpark number that you guys ended up with? Or is that what you decided was going to really build the muscle memory to make these things happen?
I think it just, when you're working, you're not really counting them. You work an hour and a half, 90 minutes at a time, maybe 2 hours in the cage over, you're going at a nice, easy pace. And that's pretty much what it adds up to. It's more of a time frame. You don't want to practice when you're tired because you don't really get anything out of it. You want every swing that you take in the cage to be meaningful. I do it on the tee. and then we go to the machine and, you know, try to locate accordingly, and then try to, you know, try to speed it up a little bit, try to get it to game speed, and see if they, you know, he can execute at game speed. You know, this is something that big leaguers, you know, this is not new, what, you know, what Chris do. Big leaguers do this all the time. Some guys are, you know, I'm not saying better at it, but they're just more in tune with what they need to do to make adjustments. JD Martinez comes to mind, Josh Donaldson, you know, all these guys that have discovered, you know, that there's more hits in the air than there are on the ground. It's just that we have to figure out how to get it in the air hard, you know, on a line drive or high line drive. You don't want to hit fly balls. You don't want to be too much under the ball, but you don't want to be on top of the ball either, because when you hit the ball on the ground, you're out pretty much, you know, with shifts and everything. You're out almost 85% of the time. So the answer is to get the ball in the air. And when it's elevated in the zone, you know, it's harder to get the ball in the air, you know, with these guys throwing 95 to 100 miles an hour now. It's just really tough to catch up to those. So you have to figure out the path, shortest path to the ball, whatever it takes, a swing thought, you know, whatever it takes, whatever's going to be that the hitter can latch on to that works for him. And it's more of a mental thing, because your body won't adjust unless you think it. And you have to think it to make it adjust. And so you're trying to just, you know, the muscle memory thing, you know, yeah, you know, that's a great word, but, you know, the brain has memory. I don't think the muscles have memory. This, you know, I think what the brain has to do is remember that sensation, that feeling. It's a sensation you feel in your swing that gets you on path. And a lot of times, most of the time throughout the entire course of 162 game season, the hitter loses it a little bit, and he's always fighting it. He's always grinding. He's always trying to get himself comfortable and in a groove where he's seeing it well and he's executing well. You know the game. It's you fail 7 out of 10 times and you're one of the best. And trying to get to that, you know, 3 out of 10 success is not easy. So
what I find interesting, Mike, is, you know, having talked to Chris in the past, and he used to always talk about trying to hit the bottom third of the baseball. And I like how you kind of laughed off the launch angle as some kind of new thing, when in fact, any of us who've read The Art of Hitting when we were kids know that goes back to Ted Williams, and who you have worked with personally, you know, connecting the first person to really, you know, Babe Ruth himself started hitting home runs when they weren't considered gentlemanly, when it wasn't the way the game was played. And everybody said, hey, this Ruth guy might be onto something here. And it does seem, when you're talking about maybe countervailing mental ideas here of being on top of the ball, having the hands high there, you're not actually swinging down. You're still trying to elevate the ball. But how do you square those two things? How do you square that swing thought of being on top of the ball, don't let the ball get below my hands, with also understanding you're still trying to generate lift?
You know, there's a lot of ways to look at it. I mean, you know, Ted kept it simple. He, you know, a pitcher's on a mound. He's releasing the ball from about a 6'2" to 6'6" height. He throws to a catcher who's got a glove 18 inches off the ground. The ball path is traveling downhill. So in order for you to get the bat lined up with the ball, you have to swing uphill slightly. Now, the science behind it, okay, that's a general statement, but the science behind it is what Ted has found was that angle is an upward angle to the ball between 6 and 10 degrees, depending on the pitch. If it's a fastball, it's less, closer to 6 degrees. And then, you know, up to as much as 10 with all the depth that's being created on the pitches. You know, when they throw sliders that break out and down and splitters, all that stuff, everything breaks down, even two-seam fastballs. So to square it up, you have to swing slightly up. But if your hands get below the path of the ball, the bat is going to be way below the path of the ball, the barrel head, because you don't swing level, and you just don't swing level. It's to swing level, you would be, you know, it's hard to hit the middle of the ball when you're swinging level. So you want to swing slightly up. You're going to hit the middle of the ball. The bottom third of the ball really becomes the middle of the ball. Mm-hmm. If you could visualize this, it's when you're coming up at a 6-degree angle and you're hitting the bottom of the middle of the middle of the ball, it looks like it's really on the bottom third of the ball because of the angle that you're coming up. So that's what Chris meant. He's focusing on that part of the ball so that he can get the barrel there. If you're going to, you know, if you hit the top of the ball and bang the ball, that's back in the 80s, the old Cardinals 80s teams with the AstroTurf and everything used to bang the ball into the ground and rely on their speed. You know, I don't know that, you know, it's not the way that I was taught to hit and to swing down on the ball. So, yeah, you want to hit the middle of the ball. But think about it. If you meet the ball squarely at a perfect 6-degree angle coming up and it's released from the pitcher, it's going to go right back where it came from, right to the pitcher's hand or his glove. So that's why if you hit the ball less than 10 degrees, you know, the old launch angle thing in the air, it's going to be in the infield most of the time. Now they get shifts, you're going to get out. You have to hit it over the shift. So you have to craft a swing that's going to produce line drives, you know, and to get technical at about 12 degrees or higher. Okay, and if you do that and you hit it square, it's going to go to the outfield, and it's probably going to be a hit most of the time. And I guess the numbers are, if you hit the ball in the air, 75% of the time you're going to get a hit, and a lot of times it's going to do some serious damage. If you hit the ball on the ground, and these are numbers, these are facts, about 85% of the time you're going to be out. So you just do the math and figure it out. You got to hit the ball in the air. But there's things that can be exploited in the swing. And, you know, when you pitch up in the zone, that angle is even less, you know, up at the top of the zone, it's, you know, closer to 2 and 3 degrees. So you can, you know, if the hitter is off just a smidgen, he's not going to hit it or follow it back at best. We figured a way to get a little bit flatter through the zone at the top of the zone. And that's what he's been doing this year. They've been pitching him up and he's basically been very consistent, making hard contact with those pitches. Now that's going to change. You know what's going to change. The scouts are out there with the scouting reports are saying Bryant's hitting the high fastball. Now we need to go back to the sliders, try to get him to chase off the plate. And, you know, you try to stay ahead of that. But the only way you can stay ahead of it is to get out there and play and see what they're doing and see the patterns that they're establishing. Ted Williams used to talk about that. Pitchers establish, you know, patterns. They throw pitches in certain counts. They throw them to certain spots. And that's what happens. And then the hitter has to adjust accordingly. And that's what they mean by making adjustments. The swing is the swing. And you hope to ingrain that in your, you know, with your swing thoughts. So I think Chris has done a good job.
He's done a great job. When you think about where he is as far as stats in Major League Baseball, he's top 5 in OPS. He's got 9 home runs. That's tied for 2nd in the league. He's 10th in RBI, despite the Cubs' offense obviously struggling. What do you think about his performance so far and where he's at, especially given what he's gone through emotionally and mentally to get to this point?
Yeah, well, the emotional and mental part, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Prior to this season, over the last 281 games, he played hurt or injured. There's distinctions there in 141 of those 280 games. And, you know, Chris, you know, wants to play and, you know, he doesn't want to, the last thing in the world he is soft. Boy, I kind of laughed at that when I read some of that stuff. Soft. Yeah, right. You can imagine trying to play this game in pain. It's not easy. It's not like football. You know, I remember the guy, Ronnie Lott, supposedly cut off his ring finger and went out and played the second half. You know, Jack Youngblood, I think, played with a broken leg. I mean, you know, those guys could still play, I guess, if you can deal with the pain. But the problem is the execution of baseball skills. The body doesn't work well when you're in pain. It just doesn't do it. You just can't do it. You better take time off. But it's taken a mental toll on him. I mean, the pandemic, was very difficult to play through last year. I don't even call it a season. It's more like scrimmage games, you know, 60-game scrimmage schedule. But it's all past that now. He got past his 18 season with his shoulder injury, which really sapped his power. 19, he played through just a little tweak in his knee, but luckily none of these injuries required any surgical repair or anything. They were just nagging injuries that made it difficult for him to perform. He's ready to go, and I think that's been the big change. And, you know, it's satisfying to see.
Well, it's a critical juncture in his career, Mike, and I'm wondering how mindful are you of what's next, about what this resurgence means for either his overall market value or whether how attractive a trade chip he may be, depending on the fortunes of the Cubs. Which scenarios have you thought through?
I've never even given it a second thought about contract year. We don't think about money. We just, you know, value. You know, the Cubs are going to do what they want to do. They're going to do what they think is best. Those things are just distractions. Chris has to play baseball. That's what he does. He's a professional baseball player. That's his job. And he has to do what's necessary to go out there and perform. He can't control. The only thing that he can control, you know, is what he's thinking. You can't control any outcomes. You know, and the decision makers are going to make decisions based on, okay, can this guy still do it? Can he play? You know, if they had a crystal ball, you know, then it might be easy for them. They might be, you know, they can look at him and say, hey, okay, this guy's going to do this when he's 34. That's dumb. I don't even look at it as a critical juncture in his career. It is what it is. I mean, he's going to be able to play. He's going to get a contract. Who knows how big it is? Who knows how long it is? But he's going to be able to play this game for a while. And, you know, less than 1% of all the guys that play in the major leagues get to play 12 years. You know, that's pretty sobering when you think about it. So, and I think Chris is going to definitely be able to be one of those guys that has a career in baseball. So we just don't think about it. You can't control it. And trying to play under those conditions is ridiculous.
Well, and I will say this, though. The thing that you also can't control is what he's doing on the field. And the work that you put in the offseason and continue to put in to elicit that change is making that happen. You're seeing the results. So I would hope that at least for you and him, that there is an element of satisfaction there, knowing that this is working.
Oh, there is, but there's a total element of satisfaction, you know, but there's also the element of humility. You know, this game can turn on you at any, you know, baseball is designed to break your heart. I mean, the game, it's just the failure that's built into the game is, it can be crushing at times, but the main thing is you have to keep reverting back to your youth. And realize why you played this game. You know, to have fun playing. It's a fun game to play. You know, at the major league level, you know, you get to hit white baseballs. You remember Bull Durham? You know, you know, it's true. You eat good food. You have a good life. Your career is extremely short. Most of these guys are done when they're, you know, they barely turn 30 and their career's over. Their whole life's ahead of them. And, you know, a lot of the guys that play the game don't get that financial security. We've been blessed there, you know, but that's also a fact that he worked his butt off to get there, too. So, yeah, it's very satisfying, but we're not going to revel in it. And we're going to just do what we got to do. He comes home every year. He's the same kid. We go out there. He takes his month off. We play golf, spend a lot of time together. And then, when it's time to go to work, he gets with his personal trainer and he gets after it, keeps his body in shape. He eats well, he takes care of himself. And we spend we spend at least 4 to 5 days a week in the cage. And it's great. The father son thing, man, is, you know, I'm glad that I'm involved with him and, you know, on a daily basis. And he listens to me because I'm still learning. I try to learn something new every day about hitting. And, you know, we're gonna adjust accordingly. You know, his talk, his launch angle's down this year. His career is 19.6. He's at 14.2 now. Launch angle's a number. We never looked at launch angle as being the end-all, be-all. It's just a number. And it's a result. The ball comes off the bat, and it comes off the bat at different angles. They measure it. They try to infer things from it, and it never squares up or dictates to us what direction we want to head in. All I can tell you is that Ted Williams kept it really simple, and that's my guiding philosophy, is that there is a slight upswing to the swing path. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. It's not level, it's up. And all the best hitters in the game, if you watch them hit, go on YouTube, you can see their swings are so similar. They may have a little bit different way they stand, okay, but when they start their swings, they're all very, very similar. And it's really dictated by body type. You know, a guy like Altuve versus a guy like Chris or Aaron Judge or Stanton, their body type, whether they're muscular, whether they're lean, they have different ways of getting to the ball because that's what their body allows them. But, you know, long arms and long legs can be a curse because the strike zone, you know, 7 across, 11 high, it expands when you're tall. There's probably 14 more locations in the zone that a pitcher can throw to. 14 more options to a guy like Chris or Stanton or Judge, as opposed to, you know, 77 spots in the strike zone as a typical average guy, about 6'2". You know, you raise that up to 91 for a guy 6'6". The pitcher's got, what, 25-30% more zone to throw to. Does that makes it difficult too?
Mike, before we let you go, how much coordination and or conflict do you have with anybody on the Cubs and in their hitting infrastructure? Because they've got a huge staff of hitting instructors there that are paid a lot of money to maximize what they have. And I understand for a PGA golfer to fix his swing, that's on him. It doesn't affect anybody else. But in a team environment, I could understand if the team's like, look, we've got this. We have hitting coaches here. Do you work with them? Do you care what they say? How do you make sure that everybody's on the same page?
There's no ego involved here. There's ultimate respect for these guys that are teaching at that level. I've talked with Mally when he was there. Iapochi came out to my cage, spent a couple days out here. There's no inherent things. You know, you got to remember this. Each major league hitter, okay, is his own instructor. He's the one swinging the bat, so he's going to determine what works for him and what doesn't. You know, Chris doesn't hinge on every word that I say. He just trusts my opinion. He processes it and he bounces it off everybody. Let me go on record here right now as saying that, you know, all the stupid things that were said about Chili Davis. Look, that guy is a veteran major leaguer. He's got a lot of respect amongst major leaguers. There was no conflict whatsoever between Rizzo and Chris and Chili Davis. Nothing. Zero. Ultimate respect for that guy. So, yeah, when you bring up the instructors thing, nobody's conflicting with anybody. I went down to St. Louis, and Chili treated me like, you know, I was one of his peers. And he was just about the nicest guy that you could ever meet. And I feel bad what happened to him, you know, because they always get the blame. They never get the credit. They always get the blame. They always fire the hitting coach, or they always fire the manager. It's unfair. It's a ruthless part of the game. But, you know, look, Chris has the ultimate respect for a guy like Chili Davis. So there was no truth to the fact that, you know, Chris and Anthony got him fired. That was dumb. I'm sure you've read that. That's been out there. That's totally dumb. You know, they have their guys. They want them in certain positions, and they let them go. And they teach. It's a wonderful thing. It really is. And these guys that dedicate themselves to being hitting instructors at the major league level, they do a yeoman's work. They video analysis. They do everything they can to help the hitters. But you got to remember that in the end, you know, the hitter, he has to process information. He's the one swinging the bat. In the end, it's all about him. And that's what I've been pressed on Chris his whole life. He said, he's a great listener, and he's extremely coachable. And there's plenty of things that he's learned along the way from all kinds of hitting coaches on the way up. And I think that's important to know. There's no conflict. There's no egos involved. I'm not stepping on anybody's toes. You know, I'm his dad, and he has a tremendous relationship with me, a lifelong relationship with me, you know, as a son and as a baseball player. I think everybody has respected that in the Cubs organization. And that, you know, that's the way I feel about it. I told Iapoche from day one, I said, hey, man, he's your guy. Go for it. You know, he's going to be fun to work with.
Mike Bryant, we really appreciate you taking the time. And it's funny, because I know my parents always said to me with a raised eyebrow, they said the only point of having kids was to have grandkids. So once the next generation came along, they didn't want to spend any time with us anymore.
That's funny. Yeah, it's great being a grandpa, let me tell you. I love my grandson. He's about the happiest, cutest, most wonderful little baby. I have a biased opinion, though. But he's just a joy. I can't wait to see him again. I haven't seen him since spring training, and that's really hard on me. And I'm always talking about Kyler Lee, KB2, and I can't wait. You know, he's just amazing. I can't wait to start playing catch with him. And
I was just going to say, you can't wait to get him in the cage is what you're talking about. You can't wait to show him how to hold a bat. I know where that's coming from. Anyway, Mike, thank you.
Yeah, he's a joy.
Thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate it.
Hey,
thank you, Mike.
Mike Bryant of Bryant Baseball Academy and Father Chris. A lot of stuff in there. This show's gone some places today, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. It really has.
Wow. All right, when we come back, what? Go ahead.
No, nothing. I'm just processing everything. Don't mind me.
I think we should probably address the fact that just as it became too late, the Bulls played one of their best games of the season yesterday. Of course they did, right? Just when I finally get on the train that maybe they should tank and maybe they should try to keep that 4 pick, all of a sudden here comes Zach LaVine and here comes them pulling away to win by 20 and just absolutely untouched in the fourth quarter. Of course that happened. We can talk about that next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Offensive rebound, Tice, and a reset, Vooch, free for three, got it! The Vooch with 27, and he's 5 of 6 behind the arc, and the Vooch is back!
What?
Okay.
What?
All right, cool. Yeah, of course. You know, I'm watching the game yesterday, and everything is just popping along, and they're moving the ball's not sticking anywhere, and they're making shots, and they shoot 49% from three and over 50% from the floor. The only thing they didn't do was make the free throws. You can't miss 7 to 17 free throws, but I guess it doesn't really matter now. It just makes me crazy that after all this time and everything, and having LaVine gone and he comes back and the presence in the rotation, the presence on the floor, and what it does to defenses. I know they have a tough time matching up against the Bulls anyway, but boy, it was fun to watch. I guess bottom line, I wish it mattered.
I kind of dismissed this game in the beginning because it was against Charlotte, who I know that the Bulls have played well for at least 2 years running now. So I was like, well, they'll win this one. And conveniently, Zach LaVine was back. But I was more intrigued by the lineup on the floor that they started out with, frankly, just to like begin it. To see that combo of LaVine, Tice, Vooch, P. Will, and Kobe to begin the game, that was interesting to me. But I'm really disappointed in Chuck Swirsky because I thought he was going to say the Vooch is on fire.
Yeah, that's where I thought
he
was going to. The Vooch is back. Yeah, just that one, it twisted at the end. There was also some funny, I you know that I have enjoyed the Garrett Temple finishing attempts throughout the year. He's just not a great finisher. He struggles at the end of a brand of one of the, you know, got 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2 or whatever it is. He's just not great at the rim. He's a good basketball player, but that's not the strength of his game. And he had one move where Stacey and Adam were just cracking up of like this little sort of hit him with a Euro finish, flip it out of the back of his hand, where it's clear he didn't really plan it or didn't really know what was going on. But I guess when you're leading by that much, you're allowed to have that kind of fun. We know that Lawrence is going to be talking with Steve Stone at noon. So when we come back, you claim that you are still, despite the fact that the interview has been over for some time, you're still researching Herbert Perry?
Oh, no, I researched it a lot. I came across a lot of stuff, so I figured I would throw it out there. And also, just to your point about Garrett Temple, finished with more points and the same amount of threes as Larry Markkanen. And if that doesn't tell you all you need to know about where Larry's at right now, I don't know what does.
Yeah, we played three more minutes than Lowry did, too. All right, so I can't wait to hear this. This is if you're going to research Herbert Perry, especially now that we've had the entire Herbert Perry experience, and if you missed that at 10 o'clock, you missed a thing. You missed an absolute Friday thing. So we'll put a cherry on top of that next on The Score.
And the Vooch is back.
Oh, don't mess with the Vooch.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
You faced Percival, though, at the Angels, didn't you, when you were at the Rangers? You faced Troy Percival.
I did, but Percival was throwing 100, but he didn't have movement. Yeah. You know, when you sit back, the guys back in those days that threw that hard, most of them were straight hard. These son of a guns now throwing 98, and it's sinking or it's rising. I mean, there were a few guys, you know, Mariano Rivera threw 93, 94, but everything moved. That is harder to hit than 98, but you put movement on it, I'm telling you. It was, that's the look I gave my dad whenever the first time I faced Ben McDonald, because about a month and a half into the season, I was hitting 500 at Florida, and I was a freshman. And they came in one day and they said, you know, how in the world did you go from such a small school to the University of Florida and never miss a beat? And I said, well, I haven't faced a pitcher yet that was better than my dad.
Until Ben McDonald.
Tremendous.
Oh, my God. It just, I want to go listen again. Like I say, I feel like it was like one of these sprawling Southern novels, or there was something that, like each next chapter was another life aspect. And I don't know. It was a saga. It was great. It was Faulknerian or Gumpian, whatever you want to say.
But wait, there's more. I like how you find Southern people so fascinating, and I just roll a note. You faced Percival in 2002. He did, though. Mm-hmm. I remember Herbert Perry the Ranger. Herbert Perry is from a town called Mayo, Florida, right? Mm-hmm. And he talked about how he could get an 8,000 square foot house with walnut floors. That detail did not escape me.
Well, he cut all the trees down and then sold the wood for $80,000.
That also did not escape me. I'm like, hold on. Strip mining's mining, obviously. But did you just strip forest the wood off some acres there? Wait, y'all putting the trees back? But here's where it gets a little interesting. The town Mayo briefly renamed itself Miracle Whip in 2018 as part of a marketing deal with Kraft in exchange for funds to beautify the town.
That seems like an easy one.
Additionally, his career, whether it be in football or baseball, has crossed some major Hall of Fame, either caliber or in the Hall of Fame type players. Like we mentioned, former teammate of Emmitt Smith playing football at the University of Florida. That is nothing to sneeze at, by the way, especially in the South. Yeah, baseball is not the first choice there. We all know that. He got to the big leagues in 95 when Dave Winfield went on the disabled list. Got picked up by the Rays in the expansion draft. Filled in for Wade Boggs when he retired. That's how he got the opportunity there, was Wade Boggs retired. We know what he did with the White Sox. And here's the stat that stands out. Chris Kamka, of course, filling in on some of this because he is the great one. His .308 batting average was the best by a White Sox third baseman, with a minimum of 50% of his games at third, with at least 400 plate appearances in his season since George Kell hit .312 in 1955. Only Yoan Moncada in 2019 .315 had done it since. 4-for-9 in the ALDS that year. Played with Alex Rodriguez and Rafael Palmeiro at Texas, and that's where he had career highs in games and home runs. It's ridiculous, this guy's life.
And I just love that he's actually, his phone is ringing as he's selling prefabricated septic tanks while doing the interview.
Oh, no, he's fabricating them. That's what he was saying. So
he casts them. Correct. He does the fabrication and then he sells them and he doesn't worry about installing them or anything like that. It's just, I don't know how many septic tanks you can, is it all just people building in Florida and they're filling in the swamp with septic tanks?
Well, that was my concern, is the water table's so high and you wonder where they go in the ground or if they keep them above the ground outside of the house. That I'm not sure about either. That's above my pay grade, as we like to say.
That was really a thing, man. That was I hope I didn't miss any of it while I was just sort of reveling in it while he was talking. It was just he just wanted to talk. That's always cool when that happens. Like I say, sometimes you run into one. Lawrence Holmes has Steve Stone at the top of the hour. We'll say good afternoon or good morning to him next on The Score.
Perry the Milkman delivers once again.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.